This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we can't go for a couple of hours to some areas because there's either a shooting going on or there is a protest by groups in the city on this violence.
That's WHO spokesman talking about security issues in fighting the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. Details coming up.
Also, a mudslide on the slopes of Uganda's Mount Elgon has left dozens dead, hundreds missing, and the UN's Children's Agency today said a militia organization in northeastern Nigeria has released 833 child soldiers from its ranks.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story, the World Health Organization says that insecurity in the DRC's North Kivu province is undermining Ebola control efforts. The WHO reports the number of Ebola cases has reached 200, including 125 deaths, and says the virus could spread into Uganda and Rwanda. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak has moved from the village of Mangina to the city of Beni, the scene of frequent attacks by a Ugandan rebel group against civilians and government forces. WHO spokesman Tarek Shazarevich says the attacks by the rebel Allied Defense Forces are not targeted at responders, but he says the dangers are too great for health workers to move around freely in so-called red zones.
We can't go for a couple of hours to some areas because there's either a shooting going on or there is a protest by groups in the city on this violence.
Shazarevich says the incidents have forced frontline workers to suspend important activities, increasing the risk of the spread of the Ebola virus. Nevertheless, efforts to contain the deadly virus continue and important inroads are being made. Shazarevich says health and frontline workers are being vaccinated, as are eligible people who came into contact with those infected by Ebola.
Since the beginning of the vaccination that started on August 8th, and that's like a week after the declaration of outbreak, 15,807 persons have been vaccinated in different areas.
The WHO has raised its risk assessment for the outbreak at both national and regional levels from high to very high. It urges neighboring provinces and countries to increase surveillance and preparedness activities in case the virus crosses borders and infects new populations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In South Africa, Pik Botha, a well-known Afrikaner leader, has died. Botha often came under fire for defending apartheid as South Africa's foreign minister before helping bridge the transition to black rule. F.W. de Klerk was president as the white-led government ended apartheid in 1994. He says Botha made an enormous contribution to the peaceful and constitutional resolution of the great historic challenges that the country faced at the time. Current President Cyril Ramaphosa says Botha will be remembered for his support for South Africa's transition to democracy and for his service in the first democratic administration. Botha served as foreign minister for 17 years, often as the government's spokesman, while the country became increasingly isolated amid international sanctions. But he also was criticized by his government for saying in 1986 that the country might one day have a black leader. Botha served as Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs for 2 years under the first black leader, President Nelson Mandela.
What started out as a planned protest over Zimbabwe's struggling economy has turned into what some activists say is an attack on civil and human rights after the arrest this week of dozens of union leaders who say they plan to march peacefully. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's growing economic crisis, which has recently sent consumer prices soaring and created shortages of everything from gasoline to medication to chicken, is shaping up to be the first major test for Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa, who took over last November after the army pushed longtime leader Robert Mugabe to resign, won July's election amid promises to fix the economy. Earlier this month, his government announced a new 2% tax on money transfers and a plan to float the nation's unpopular U.S. dollar-pegged bond notes. Those announcements led shops to raise prices and prompted consumers to attempt to stockpile goods. The nation's largest trade union coalition announced it would march this week to protest conditions. Police swooped in on Thursday and Friday and arrested 42 trade union members who were connected with the demonstration, according to human rights activists. And that, says Lizwe Jamela of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, is where this turned decisively from an economic story to a much more worrying one.
It is a human rights issue because it involves the issue of the guaranteed rights in the Constitution. The freedom to demonstrate and to petition is a constitutional right within the Zimbabwean framework. So in terms of the Constitution, citizens are allowed to demonstrate and to petition. The only condition is that it has to be a peaceful demonstration. And there was no indication that the planned procession was not going to be a peaceful march.
Multiple calls to the Harare office of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions were not answered Friday. Police have said they can't allow public gatherings because of a recent cholera outbreak that has killed more than 30 people in the capital. Derek Matyshek, a Harare-based analyst from the Institute for Security Studies, says many Zimbabweans don't believe that reasoning.
People were very angry about that, particularly as this announcement came at the time that a lot of corruption was being exposed in the newspaper. So people got the feeling that they were being taxed in order to pay for the lavish lifestyles of government officials.
President Mnangagwa has assured followers on Twitter that there is no need to panic. He added, the government is guaranteeing the availability of all essential commodities. Matyshek says the government has made efforts to try to stabilize the situation by saying they've secured a $500 million loan that would give strength to the Zimbabwean bond note and by assuring citizens that they're importing essentials like fuel.
The question is whether this is just a little blip, it's a panic which is going to settle down, or whether it's going to be a chronic malaise and this situation is going to continue. We'll discover that in the next week or so.
But for many Zimbabweans, that's a long time to contend with empty store shelves, long queues for gasoline, and the other question that has haunted Zimbabwe since Mugabe's departure. When will things get better? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Italy's foreign minister has met with his Russian counterpart to secure Moscow's support for an international conference on Libya in Sicily next month. U.S. President Donald Trump has given his blessing to the conference, which is bringing together the warring sides in Libya, its neighbors, the Gulf states, and the European Union. Jason Pack is the founder and president of Libya Analysis, a research company focused on the country. He discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi whether the conference could advance efforts to stabilize Libya.
This conference is in reality a byproduct of French efforts, particularly the May conference in Paris held by Emmanuel Macron, to push for Libyan elections. However, the recent violence in Tripoli has made it clear that there won't be elections by December, and there never, in fact, were going to be. So the Italians are trying to present an alternative forum. It is encouraging that both Trump and the Russians are willing to participate in this venue. However, it can only succeed if it transcends the larger Franco-Italian tensions that have divided the international community about Libya over the last year.
What is preventing the UN from providing security assistance to curb the influence of armed militias in Libya, which are effectively controlling the country?
Well, in an ideal world, the UN would have personnel and monies and capacity to do something like provide security assistance. Unfortunately, in the world we live in, the UN is so understaffed that it doesn't even have the intelligence and technical capacities to analyze the problem, let alone to do something like provide security assistance. Each time the GNA, the Government of National Accord, is threatened, it announces some kind of rebranding of itself and, oh, it's going to work with this group or that group. But in fact, the quote-unquote government is just beholden to various militias on the ground in Libya, and those militias occasionally change names or they change the formal relationships that they have to the Ministry of the Interior. But the UN can succeed in getting people in the same room, but it's not able to train them or force them to comply to any larger agenda.
UN-backed Government of National Accord appointed a new interior minister who is close to Misrata armed groups, hoping to implement new security arrangements in Tripoli, including the withdrawal of armed groups from ministries and state institutions. Would that work?
Well, it was very surprising that Prime Minister of the General National Accord government, Faiz al-Sarraj, randomly announced a few days ago, oh, why don't we have Fatih Bashagha become the Minister of the Interior? The reason that that was quite surprising is that Bashagha himself didn't know that he was going to be appointed, quickly went on social media and said, I don't accept this post. So it shows, in fact, how embattled the GNA is, that it's close to falling apart and just drawing at straws. Oh, if we appoint this person, it'll appease these groups in Misrata. I don't think that the GNA is going to collapse, and Sarraj is very, very good at weathering the storm, but he has no game plan. He's completely reactive, just trying to stay one step ahead of any crisis and to prevent his being ousted.
Strongly. The U.S. is backing the GNA, but under what circumstances would the U.S. play a different active role in Libya?
I would love to see the Trump administration understand that our national security interests, our economic interests vis-a-vis oil, and our connection to our European partners on the migration question require us to engage in building Libyan state institutions. However, that hasn't happened yet and seems unlikely to happen. So I think it would require a rethink on behalf of the National Security Council that it wants to engage rather than just delegating to the State Department a kind of hold-and-wait-and-see policy in Libya.
That was Jason Pack with Libya Analysis. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy.
The United Nations Children's Agency today said a militia organization in northeastern Nigeria has released 833 child soldiers from its ranks. The Civilian Joint Task Force has been fighting the Boko Haram extremist group since 2013. Last year, it promised to stop recruiting child soldiers. UNICEF says this was the first time the group released any of its young fighters. UNICEF called the release a significant milestone in efforts to end the use of child combatants in the region. UNICEF has worked with the Civilian Joint Task Force to verify the presence of children in its ranks and says there are about 1,500 in the city of Maiduguri in Borno State. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The WHO says that insecurity in the DRC's North Kivu province is undermining Ebola control efforts. A mudslide on the slopes of Uganda's Mount Elgon has left dozens dead and hundreds missing. And the United Nations Children's Agency today said a militia organization in northeastern Nigeria has released 833 child soldiers from its ranks. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A mudslide on the slopes of Uganda's Mount Elgon has left dozens dead, hundreds missing, including an entire school and other people homeless. The disaster was triggered by a heavy downpour that lasted 4 hours. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
A search and rescue operation is continuing in eastern Uganda's Bududa district, where about 51 bodies have been recovered and hundreds are missing following yesterday's mudslide. The death toll is expected to rise. People had gathered from several towns for a market day when the river Sume burst its banks, sending boulders crashing down on the crowd and raising houses. Godfrey Watenga represents the area in Parliament.
We can't establish the number of people who are dead because being a market day in Naposhi, there are those who are from Manafa, we are just picking them from the waters. There are those who are from Sirongo, the traders were there in the same center. More property has been destroyed, all bridges have gone, roads have been cut off, there's a school which has been taken.
Rescue workers are digging through heaps of mud. About 200 children are unaccounted for from a school that was washed away. James Kiumi is a resident of Sume, one of the affected villages.
Some children from one school called Shitetei have also been swept in the very river and over 400 missing.
Uganda's government has dispatched a disaster team comprising police and other rescue teams to beef up the district disaster rescue and recovery team. Patrick Onyango is the Uganda police spokesperson.
We have to make on-site assessment. For example, what is required, what equipment to be used, how to reach the site, who to access the site, because not everybody should reach there.
A local team armed with hoes, sticks, is digging through the mud in desperate attempts to rescue their loved ones. Many survivors whose houses were swept away are reportedly sleeping in the cold. Meanwhile, the downpours are continuing, hampering rescue operations. Landslides are a common occurrence in the hilly parts of eastern Uganda. In 2010, massive landslides hit Bududa, killing about 100 people and destroying buildings, including the village market and a church. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Rwanda's first digital healthcare service is expanding with a partnership with the National Social Security Board, which covers public workers. The digital service provides healthcare via mobile phone. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali.
These doctors are consulting with their patients by phone. They work at Baby Health, the first digital healthcare service in Rwanda. It is a subsidiary of Babylon, a British healthcare company that provides online and cell phone health services in the United Kingdom. It's been operating in Rwanda since 2016. Clients book phone consultations with a doctor by texting to a specific number. They also can book laboratory tests and get prescriptions ordered. Muvunyile once lives in Kigali. He describes his experience with the service.
They are offering the good services on time, on the short period. You get a call from them. You don't need to call them. You just go on your phone. You dial. They consult. You know what to do, where you have to get your prescriptions.
Now, government employees will be able to use Babili. Under the agreement with the Rwanda Social Security Board, they get a 15% discount for the service. However, Rwandans living in the villages don't have access to this technology. Valentine Nwemubye lives in the Rusizi district of Western Province. Look here, we don't have the electricity. To charge phone is to climb up on that mountain. They are so far. How can we get those services? They will find us dying. For Dr. Patrick Nsinga, the medical director at Babili, the problem of internet connectivity and electricity is a challenge. To avoid part of that, the company replaced it with the phone app that is used in Britain with text messages. but a patient still needs a charged mobile phone.
In the UK, doctors do not sit in an office like this. They pick up the calls from home because they have enough internet connectivity. For us to go around the internet's challenge, we came up with the USSD app. This is why for our service, you don't need an app.
Since 2016, Babili Health has carried out 170,000 consultations in Rwanda. But without great infrastructure expansion, it might not be able to grow much further. The Rwanda Utilities Regulatory Agency, RURA, showed that last year about 73% of Rwandan adults have cell phones. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali.
Rwanda's Foreign Minister Louise Mushikiwabo today was elected head of the International Organization of La Francophone, or OIF. Her candidacy was somewhat surprising for some OIF members. The group represents more than 50 nations or regions where French is a major language. Rwanda in 2008 dropped French as a language for education in favor of English. It has also had rocky relations with France since the 1994 genocide, in which more than 800,000 people died, most of them ethnic Tutsis. The Rwandan government accused France of being involved in the violence, which the French government has denied. However, in the past few years, Rwandan President Paul Kagame has worked to improve relations with Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.